Welcome to Eat the Evidence, a podcast for cake and cookie decorators and sugar artists of all kinds. This is episode number 24 on May the 3rd, 2018. I'm your host, Kimberly Chapman, and today my guest, Abby Jimenez of Nadia Cakes, is on to talk about what happens when your cake goes unexpectedly viral for reasons you didn't intend. Plus, we talk about our shared experiences as cakers who are also romance writers, and how those worlds overlap a lot more than you might think. So whether you're designing your next sugar arts masterpiece, driving around delivering cake orders, or trapped in an airplane traveling between cake shows, let's get this show started to amuse and inspire you through whatever you need to do today. Just a quick warning up front that if you're listening with kids or are otherwise sensitive to discussion about human reproduction and the body parts that go along with that, you might want to hold this episode for later or skip it. My guest is riding a great PR wave on social media right now for cakes that look vaguely like particular body parts, unintentionally at first, and this interview features that cake as well as discussion about the wider social issues around love and romance and people either being amused or enraged at those topics. So, if you think that kind of thing will amuse you, please enjoy. And if you think that kind of thing will enrage you, just skip to the next episode, which will feature an entirely wholesome discussion about hat cakes and bears dressed up like Elvis instead. Joining me now is Abby Jimenez of Nadia Cakes in Maple Grove, Minnesota. Welcome, Abby.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, I'm really glad to have you on. I have to admit, I found Nadia's cakes because of the post that we're going to start talking about in a second, because it's obviously the thing that made you, you know, get your numbers up on the social media. But I don't know if you want to introduce that or do you want me to?
Yeah, so no, it's okay. I can introduce it because I'm actually really excited to tell everybody who's been asking how to pronounce the geode. People don't know how to pronounce it. So this is a perfect forum in this podcast to tell people it is the geode. That's how you say it.
That's what I thought was the geode. What are they saying? Vagiode or something?
I'm not sure how they're saying it, but a lot of people are asking how it's said. And I actually withheld the information just so I could say it in this podcast. So I could be like, if you want to know how to say it, go listen to the podcast.
Awesome. So it was you had a cake with a geode on it that people said, well, that looks like a woman's lady parts.
Yeah. So what happened is the staff sent me, I do all the social media, so the staff sent me a picture of a cake like they always do when they want to sell it. And that particular cake, this is kind of funny, but we were actually going to do a geode cake workshop. So they made a little sample cake so they could see how long it took and take pictures of it so that we could put it on all the workshop information. And then when they were done with their pictures, they didn't need the picture. They didn't need the cake anymore. So they sent it to me to post it on social media. I did not see the lady bits in this cake. Otherwise, to be honest, I would not have shared it. I mean, we actually don't even sell X-rated cakes. So they sent me this picture. I posted it and people started commenting like, hey, that thing looks like a vagina. And I was like, oh, and I started just kind of bantering back and forth with them because it was hilarious. And, you know, honestly, there was like this moment where I was like, maybe I should delete this post because we are a family run bakery and it's not really PG. But then I was like, no, I'm having way too much fun. So I just started replying to people with these like, you know, witty quips about how they think this cake is a vagina. And it was the funniest thing because, you know, it was funny and people were reading it. But, you know, it kind of petered out after a few days. And I was sitting at dinner with one of my girlfriends and I looked at this post and I said, you know what, it's kind of weird because this post was shared like 200 times. And since I've been sitting here at dinner with you, it's been shared like 50 more times. And she's like, really? And I'm like, yeah, hold on. And I refreshed the page and now it's 100 shares and now it's 200 shares. And it was just blowing up in front of my eyes. And or she said to me, you know, maybe tomorrow it'll have 1,000 shares. And I was like, yeah, that'd be really cool. Well, now it's been viewed over 7 million times. And it like literally has traveled the world and back. The Geode saga, as we are calling it, has been in The Sun. It's been in articles written in German. It's been on Scary Mommy and Life of Dad and Cosmopolitan.com. And actually just now, New York Post just posted an article about the Geode. And it's been like so much fun. I've had so much fun. I told my husband, I have never had more fun in my life. These people are hilarious. Like, I love our new following of perverts from all around the world. including you.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to remember now how I saw it, because it was a couple months ago at this point, right? I think it was, yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, so, just, you know, people started writing articles about it, and it was the comments that everybody was cracking up about. And then everybody was asking for the cute mushroom cake. So I made a funny joke about, oh, I guess we shouldn't make that cute mushroom cake, you know, because our customers are too perverted. And everyone's like, we need this mushroom cake. So we ended up making the mushroom cake, and I just kind of started documenting the mushroom cake saga. And it's just been a really fun couple of months.
Yeah, and it's been really positive. I mean, at least the stuff I've seen, like wherever I saw it from, I'm pretty sure it was another caker somewhere. I see your tweets in other places. And your tweets get memed, and they go around mom groups, and they go around romance novel groups, which we, you know, if you want to get into that, we can get into that. But so you have enough of a following anyway with, like, 'cause you have some really good witty posts that you make as you. And so I think, yeah, I'm seeing, like, I haven't seen anyone be offended, which is interesting because people do get offended by ridiculous things.
Yeah, they really do. And to be honest, I was so shocked that people did not get offended about the Geode. I think in the entire time that this has been going on, I've maybe had like one or two, and I really do mean like one or two people that are just like, okay, can we get back to cupcakes now? But I think the thing is that Nadia Cakes has always been a little edgy. You know, our most popular event is our unicorn poop event, where we literally take a pile of unicorn, rainbow unicorn poop, and we smack it on top of a rainbow cupcake. And that's like our biggest event of the year. So, I mean, I don't think it really surprised people. Our shirts have funny little quips on it. Like our shirts say, my cupcakes bring all the boys to the yard. Our delivery van has funny little sayings on it. So I think the people that were already following us and love us kind of knew that this was in the same wheelhouse, I guess. So yeah, it's been highly positive. And I really do enjoy my new social media following. Sometimes I wake my husband up in the morning, I'm laughing. He's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm playing with my new friends. Because, you know, like I'll post something funny and their comments just crack me up. I mean, it's just been an all around really awesome thing. And, you know, the other side of this is I am a very private person. I actually never had any public social media pages for myself. You know, the business is the business. And sometimes I would have to do media, you know, as the face and the founder of the company, but it's not something I've ever really been comfortable with. I'm actually a really huge introvert, and I wrote some romance novels, and I ended up landing a literary agent with a query letter that had a dick joke in it. And yeah, it's so funny because my literary agent tells people about that. And I was talking to this other author who was considering taking my agent as her literary agent. And, you know, she was asking me all about her. And I said, you know, I love my agent. She's amazing. And I landed her with this dick joke. And this author goes, oh my God, you're the dick joke lady. And she's like, Stacy told me all about you. She goes, I feel like I'm talking to a celebrity. She was telling me how she has this one author who put a dick joke in her query. And and she was like, oh, I need to represent this author. So anyway, my literary agent told me that I needed to have a author's platform so that I could sell my books when they get published. So I started, you know, a Facebook page for me, a Twitter for me, and an Instagram. I've got, you know, the three platforms that I use. And I was just kind of really slowly collecting followers. And then this Geode thing happened. And I'm not kidding. I had my social media pages for like 6 weeks or something. And then now I've got like this cult following of, like I said, perverts from all over the internet. And it's just so much fun. Like, it's just a whole different thing that I was not doing 6 months ago that has just been really enjoyable for me. I can't thank the Geode enough, I guess, is what I'm saying.
I'm speaking of your shirts, I'm looking at one of the Nadia Cakes posts right now of the shirts where we didn't choose the Geode, like the Geode chose us. And the other shirts that you have on this, these are great. You could sell those shirts.
I know people want to buy them. And what's funny is actually one of the butthurt people that was like, can we just get back to cupcakes? I actually responded as the admin of Nadia Cakes to that lady. And I said, hey, look, we didn't choose the Vigio'd life. The Vigio'd life chose us. And then we were like, that's a shirt. So there you have it.
I've had people be offended. I posted, and I've alluded to this on the show, but I haven't actually talked about it fully, in part because I didn't want to have to put the warning message that we're putting at the beginning of this episode. Because, and this is the thing, I shouldn't have to. Like, vagina is just a word. It's just a thing. It's just, you know, more than 50% of us have one. It's not a big deal, but it is. So I will have a warning at the beginning. But I had posted, do you remember there was that whole thing where some idiot had put a sign up that if Hillary was elected, she would enact her vagenda of manocide?
Oh my God, vagenda.
A vagenda.
I really
of,
like that word.
Yeah.
Okay, okay, go on.
So it's like, so some idiot had put this on their business sign, like in front of their business in the South somewhere, you know, like whatever. Okay, well, then the feminists on, you know, Facebook and social media sort of got a hold of this and started posting their vagenda for the day. And it would be like, vagenda item one, I'm going to do the laundry. Vagenda item two, I'm going to do groceries. Vagenda item three, manocide. Vagenda item four, cleaning up from the manocide. And so then it became like people were posting their legitimate agenda, what they were going to do today, but as a vagenda, and always sticking manocide somewhere, because manocide's not even a word. Like, I mean, it was an illiterate, stupid thing for this guy to have put on his sign. And we were all just having a grand time with it. And so I posted one day on Facebook for my vagenda today is that I was doing some household stuff I had to do. And then I was going to be doing some volunteer work for two groups that I do volunteer stuff for. And like the good PR person that I am, I named them because you should always name something to get it out there, right? And so the two things were the That Takes the Cake show in Austin, which I am the PR director for. So I think I was empowered to make the decision that this would be funny to everybody. And then,
and
the other group was the Cambridge chapter of the British Sugarcraft Guild, of which I had just become secretary. Later that afternoon, I'm in Tesco, which is the big grocery store here, with my kids. And my older daughter has my phone because she likes to look at the list, right? She thinks it's a big deal. She didn't have a phone at the time. So she's using my phone and she goes, someone keeps texting you and they're really mad at you. And I'm like, wait, what? I'm trying to like read ingredients over here and keep my 4-year-old, well, actually, again, then she would have been a 3-year-old, 3-year-old from stealing stuff from the shelves. And I'm like managing things. And I'm like, fine, give me the phone. And the chairperson of the Cambridge British Sugarcraft Guild is texting me repeatedly about how so many people are offended. I'm like, we have 17 members. That's not even a so many. But like, who's, and so I'm like texting her back saying, well, who's offended? Well, I'm not going to break their confidence. And I'm like, oh, okay, so like, it's you. But like, so I'm not saying that, right? Like, I'm like, and clearly she's just offended. But she won't let it go. And she keeps texting me. And I'm like, okay, I'm with my kids. You need to back off. When I get back to a computer, I realize, oh, the Facebook page was not locked down. So that if anyone mentioned it, that got posted on their page. So they hadn't set up the page properly. So it was posted on the page. Okay. And like I said, we had like not even 20 followers. So it's not like this was a big scandal. So I went on there. I had administrative things on the page. I went on there. I deleted it. And I set the settings so that that could never happen again. I'm like, there, good. I fixed it. Okay. For 3 months, they kept complaining.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. Until the next, when we finally had a committee meeting again, I said, okay, like, if you keep doing this, I will quit. I get in there, and the husband of the former president, or chairperson, sorry, they don't say it's president, whatever, the husband, and so, like, they own the cake shop in town, he starts in on me about how offended he was. And I'm like, okay, you know what? It's already been dealt with, and you set up the page, and if you had set it up properly, this wouldn't have happened. And it's been dealt with, it, and this is 3 months old now. I'm here to do a job, and I've been working really hard, and I had doubled our numbers. We had up to 30 people, and not because of that, but, like, in spite of that, I had doubled our numbers, and I said, I'm just here to do this. You need to let this go, or I'm walking out. And he just kept doing it, and then the chairperson came out from around the back of the meeting room, and she's just letting him in. I'm like, you know what? Last warning. Drop it. Or I'm done. And they wouldn't drop it. So I went to my car and I had a feeling this might happen. I took the briefcase that had all the secretarial documents and I came and I dropped it on the counter. I said, good, you're about to find out how much work this was. And I walked out.
Wow.
Yeah. So they weren't just
that butt hurt.
About the word vagenda. It wasn't even, there wasn't even a picture. So it's like, you have a really good crop of people who are not being jerks at you. And I'm so happy for that because it's restoring my faith in humanity.
Yeah. You know, they really, it also has to do with the fact that this was a complete and utter accident. And I think people know that, you know, like we didn't make this cake look like a vagina and then pretend we did. Like, we legitimately did not see this thing. And I just think that people really appreciate that we rolled with it and we embraced it and we laughed about it and we didn't get offended that that's what they saw. I mean, because it was our cake, you know, it wasn't supposed to be a vagina.
Right.
I suppose I could have been butthurt. Lucas could have been butthurt that people thought his beautiful work of art was a vagina. But no, people have been amazing. It's been really incredible. And I've got Vigeode jewelry now and a Vigeode phone charger. And my best friend sent me Vigeode bookends. And yeah, my daughter goes, I think 20 years from now, we're all going to walk through the house and go, where did all this Vigeode stuff come from? Like, what? Like, why do we have all these pink, like, rocks in the house? Because I had Vigeode that one time. But yeah, it's been really great. And I so enjoy my following. I cannot even tell you. Like, they are the best. And here's the thing, too. You would think, because of the nature of this post, that there would be some perverts, like actual perverts. I'm not talking about, like, funny, ha-ha, we appreciate your Vigeode witticism perverts. I'm talking about, like, actual perverts, like, sending me, like, you know, DMs with dick pics in it or something. And I have not had a single inappropriate person hit me up since this whole thing has started. And that right there should restore your faith in humanity.
It does. Because, it almost feels like this must be some magical universe. Like, I'm not quite sure that's reality. Wow.
Yeah. Like, maybe there's some filtered messages or something that I'm not seeing and the pics are in there. I don't know. But no, it's been amazing. Like, I was kind of braced for it, you know, and even my literary agent was like, be ready. Like, the weirdos are out there. And I don't know, maybe they're my right kind of weird or something. I don't know, but it's been really amazing.
That is awesome because nobody needs that. None of us need that.
No.
I mean, I don't want to, it was a private post. I'm not going to name it. Say a cake friend who has done a different TV show, has been lamenting about the inappropriate messages she's been getting because she's pretty on TV. And it's a constant problem for her. And she's doing another season of this show. So that's great. And I'm really happy for her. But I see her suffering that side of it that effectively no one can do anything about it. Like, once they've targeted you, they've targeted you. And it sucks. And if she comes on the show sometime, I'll let her talk about it if she wants to. But yeah, I mean, it's been really bad.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I mean, there's always those thirsty guys out there that behave that way. But maybe because, you know, this whole thing was done behind the guise of an admin status, you know, and it almost is faceless.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And now that I have my personal social media, I'm super married. I'm so married. I have kids, like, you know, and I really don't post like selfies or, you know what I mean? It's just, I don't know. I feel like maybe there's a little bit of a divide there, a boundary perhaps, that I don't have that same forward-facing social media that perhaps your friend has. And it's funny because my 13-year-old is on YouTube and I'm like, I'm not doing that because that means I got to put on a bra and I got to put on makeup and I am not showing up for that. Like, that's just not going to happen. But yeah, like it's just been really very positive and nobody has been creepy or thirsty or gross. So I appreciate that.
That is really good. And well, and it's, is it building back up again? Cause I saw that you had just your Mother's Day cakes that you've just come out with.
Yeah. So it was funny because we were going to do these really tasteful, succulent cakes, right? They come in a glass bowl, like a clear glass bowl. And they've got handmade edible succulents inside of them. Very tasteful. And I just kind of said to the staff, do you think we should offer Vigeode cakes? Because people, I mean, they order them. And I said, how about this? I'll just do a poll on Facebook and see what our customers want. Well, they want the Vigeode.
Yeah, so, I just looked at that poll and I answered it so I could see, because I couldn't see the results without answering it. And I was like, oh, she's put this as seriously like 10 out of 10 buy, and I'm clearly not buying from England. So I said that no, just to see what would happen. And clearly the yeses are outweighing the noes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And even, you know, that's kind of funny because I wonder how many people did the same thing you did because they know that we don't ship them and they know that, you know, maybe we're not near them. They're not near enough to pick one up. But yeah, it was overwhelmingly yes. So now we're doing the Vigio cakes, and they come in waffle blue, labia pink, and magenta. And people are just, they're loving it, man. The orders are pouring in. In fact, my staff was like, okay, we need to have a solid cutoff date for these because the phones will ring off the hook. Whenever we have a really hot promotional item, the phones ring off the hook. Like, we actually have to man the phones just so that we can take these orders.
Wow. I shared that post because when I saw it come up, I was like, oh yeah, these color names. I'd explain blue waffle to my husband, which is not a thing people should Google because that's the whole origin of that.
We'll just say, not Google.
Yeah, don't Google that.
It's, don't do it.
It's just another reference for lady parts. That's all you need to know. But it comes from a hoax. Yes, I mean, I didn't actually even know the whole history until my husband was like, why? And then we're making Avatar jokes. Like, it just got really inappropriate here really fast. It was really funny. But
yeah, I didn't know what it was either until the Vigiode saga.
We've learned so much.
Then I am not the same person I was 3 months ago. I have seen things, Kimberly.
Have romance novels coming out at some point, hopefully soonish in the future.
Yeah, so a few months before the Vigiode saga, I finished my first novel, and writing has always been a big hobby of mine. And I thought, you know, this got a really good reception on Critique Circle, where I was running the book through. Critique Circle is a tit for tat community where authors can post their chapters and other authors help them with revisions and plot and all that stuff. And so I thought, you know, I'm going to query this. So I queried the book and landed myself a literary agent, which means that it's good. It's not total garbage. Mm-hmm. Professionals actually like this thing. And now we're shopping it to publishers. So in the last few months, I actually written a second novel in the series. So I've got two books that are in submissions right now. And if you want to follow and, you know, be there when I have a publishing announcement, you know, obviously follow me on social media because that's the best place for all of the things. But yeah, that's where that's at. So I've had a lot of people ask me, you know, where can I buy your books? When are they coming out? I do not have a published date yet because I do not have a publisher yet. But I can tell you that some very big names in the publishing industry have it. It is in good hands. It's getting a lot of interest. And I'm hoping for an announcement quite soon.
That is very cool. I mean, I was one of those people asking, where can I get it? Because I have, like, no reading time since I started this podcast because I'm just doing so much work all the time. But I was like, oh, no, like a podcast written by someone who, because I can tell if you're making these, you know, lighthearted jokes and like just like the flavor of the conversations and the tweets you make. I see that and I'm like, here's someone who's going to write something that's, one, not going to piss me off, because I, as a romance writer myself, part of why I did that is because I don't like certain topics that I don't think are very romantic that obviously I'm not going to go into in depth. But the listeners can guess, it, you know, nasty, violent, yucky stuff is not a turn on. And so when I see the stuff that you're posting, I'm like, I feel comfortable thinking that's probably something I can read and will still be within my value set and will probably have some of the wit and charm and things that I would enjoy as a reader.
Absolutely. And it's funny because the characters in my two novels are very closely similar to me and my best friend, just personality. And I mean, I just wrote books that I thought were fun. And so, yeah, your instincts are spot on. You know, the books are very witty and wry. There's a lot of really relatable content. And, you know, just like you, I wrote romance novels that I felt were lacking. I feel like a lot of what's out there is just very cliche. And there's a lot of, you know, billionaire alpha male romances, which are fine. You know, I mean, that is certainly a genre that people enjoy reading. But, you know, I wanted to write something where maybe the guy is like a guy you might actually know in real life. You know, maybe the girl has got some real issues. You know, maybe she's struggling with infertility or, you know, self-worth issues, or she's got the same problems that normal people have, you know, and I didn't want to rush over those. So the books have a lot of depth, but they're very quick reads in the way that, you know, the language is very, it's very witty, it's very wry, it's very funny, and it's very relatable. So yeah, everything you see on my social media pages, just picture that, but like as a romance.
I mean, I want to like a lot of romance more than I end up liking. I mean, I have found some good ones, and particularly, you know, some small press or indie ones where people have a little more latitude to do some of that stuff. I have read some good ones where I'm like, oh, this is what I wanted. You know, something that's got that little bit of spice to it, but it's otherwise a good story. Cause I'm not, in case listeners don't understand, there's romance and then there's erotica. And erotica is just the hot, sexy stuff. And so we see a lot of stuff that's on Amazon, you know, with dinosaurs and weirdness, or people have taken a theme and they're now putting a dirty quote unquote spin on it. That's more erotica, which it's not my thing. I have nothing wrong with it. I'm not a prude at all. I'm very sex positive. I have such limited reading time. If I'm reading something, I want to care about the characters. And some romance books are really good about that, and many are not.
Yes, I tend to agree with you on that. Or they try so hard to make these heroines quirky and funny and that you just end up rolling your eyes. You know, it's like, stop trying so hard. No, and my books, there are open door sex scenes, but they are not graphic sex scenes. That's just not the way that I write. Actually, I had to do a revise and resubmit for one editor who wanted me to make one of my sex scenes steamier. And, you know, sometimes that's not even what's right for that particular character or that particular story, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, because, yeah, if it feels forced, then the reader is going to pick up on that.
Yeah, the readers, they could tell. But I had so much fun writing them, and I honestly cannot wait to share them because I think everyone's going to really enjoy them. They're very funny. And here's the thing too, you know, you talked a little bit about triggering topics and, you know, or books that make your eyes roll. And here I got to tell you this, when you are submitting your work on Critique Circle and you have literally hundreds of jerks all across the world reading your chapters, if there is something triggering in there, oh, they will tell you.
I bet.
And I've gotten a very thick skin, and I have a very good sense of how these books will be received just because they've been beta read by like literally hundreds of people, you know, of all different walks of life. You know, I've got readers in Ireland. I've got male readers. I have a 65-year-old man in Texas who really enjoys reading my romances, you know? So I can honestly tell you, I think that they are fabulous books, and I just cannot wait to make that announcement when they're going to be published, because I'm like chomping at the bit to share them.
Yeah.
It sucks that the publishing industry works so slowly, but it is what it is.
It does. It moves at glacial speeds.
Yes,
and that's partly because, you know, again, the bigger the publisher, the more they need, if they're doing these, you know, multi-thousand first runs, they need to know that's going to sell. So they're a lot pickier. But I've done small press. I've done indie. I mean, my training, like I said, as a journalist, so I know I can write, but it's finding that audience to match, because that's part of what they're supposed to be good at. They're supposed to say to you, well, we've read what you've written and we know the audience for this imprint or this particular line has not only these demographics, but these tastes because of what's done well before. So they're supposed to be good at knowing, here's something you've written that we can put in this line right here and it will do well. But if the line doesn't exist because you're pushing boundaries, or like one of my favorite reviews of my book is when someone very early on said I was trope smashing, and I was like, yes, trope smashing.
I am there for that.
Yeah, it was because in my indie novel, Finding Gaia, the lead character is a millionaire, and he's not alpha. I mean, he should be, but he's not. And like, that's pretty much what the story is that I take those typical romance things and I'm going to knock them off a cliff.
See, and that's what I like, because, you know, here's the thing. Everything is tropey. I mean, a trope is not a bad thing.
It's no, not always
a category, but it's making it so that it's not cliche. You know what I'm saying? Like that sounds so refreshing. I think I'm going to read your book.
Okay. Well, I'll put a link to it. But it's, I mean, also mine are ebook only at the moment. I was going to do a Kickstarter to do a paper version of that one, but that's when we adopted our second daughter. So it's like, I'll get to that.
That is exactly how I like to enjoy my books, because me and my cell phone are never apart from each other ever. So that works. That's perfect.
Awesome. Well, so I mean, like, basically that story is about immortal people, but they're not vampires, but he's been accused of it and he doesn't like it. Yeah. It's this idea that he's acquired this money over generations because as a white male, he could. And she doesn't have that money because she's female and existed in England when women couldn't hold property. And so, like, part of it is like the whole story of how two people who both have, you know, magically, I mean, I have actually science-y'd it out in sort of fakey science ways, but how these people can get from the same start to very different outcomes purely because of how women and men are treated differently. And that's just white people. That's not, I haven't even addressed people of color, partly because I'm always on this thing where I would love to write more people of color, but I feel as a white person, I'm very sensitive to not whitewashing that. Uh-huh. So I'm very, very careful about that. But yeah, so that's a lot of, and then, I mean, this story, it's called Finding Gaia, and, you know, okay, spoiler alert, they find her right away, because that's not literally what it's about. It's about her finding herself. That is, it's about her realizing, I'm a powerful being and I can have my own agency. That is the point of the story. But it's very niche because not everyone, you know, people do like their bodice rippers, you know. Uh-huh. One point I think she even says, why would anyone rip a bodice? They're very expensive. Because she used to be a seamstress and like, so, you know, why would anyone rip this thing? That's a terrible idea. Also, they're very strong and hard to rip. That's an awful idea. But, you know, people like that kind of stuff and that is what sells. And I do sometimes feel like, well, you know, I could go out there and write some tawdry trash and probably make some money, but no, I'll stick to my ideals, which make no money.
Yeah, I wanted to write people that felt like people you would actually know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, I love V. Keelan and Penelope Ward. Those are super erotic novels with some pretty quirky and fun plots, and I blew through, gosh, probably like 7 or 8 of their books. But, you know, like, you just get to the point where you just want something a little deeper, you know, and you want to feel like this person could be you, you know?
Yes.
That's really what my novels are like. I mean, I wrote them for me. I wrote them never thinking that I was going to publish them or launch them out into the universe. I mean, I truly didn't. It was just a hobby of mine. And, you know, when I put these books out there on Critique Circle and they got such a cult following, it was very encouraging. And that's the only reason why I decided to try for a literary agent. And I ended up actually getting my literary agent on my very first query. She was my first choice.
Wow.
So that was really amazing. I feel like my publishing experience so far has not been the standard one. But I, you know, to be fair though, I did do a ton of research into which agent I wanted. I made sure that the agent that I queried was the right agent for my book, that the agency was the right agency for my book. I'm with Red Sofa Literary in St. Paul. And I very much wanted a boutique agency and I wanted them to be based in my home state because a large part of my first novel does take place in Minnesota. And I thought, you know, an agency in Minnesota is going to better appreciate what I've written. So, you know, I did a ton of research and my agent was like, in her submission guidelines, she's like, I want humor, humor, humor. I mean, she said it like 7 or 8 times. She loves humor and also zombies. And my book does not have zombies in it, but there is a zombie discussion. And I freaking love zombies. Like, I love zombie shows. I'm all about the zombies. So anyway, I queried the right agent is what I'm saying. And, you know, managed to get myself represented very early on in the game. But yeah, it is a very tedious process. I can't wait for it to be done.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's okay. I think you probably had success. I mean, some of it is, there's always a luck-ish fact. I don't know if I don't believe in luck, but you know what I mean? Like, there's right place, right time. There is that aspect to it. But you did the work, you did the research, and that does matter. I mean, like, I did the equivalent of that research and stuff back when you had to go to the library for the reference book that listed all the people because they didn't have websites, you know, 20 years ago, because I'm old. But, it is work, and part of the downside now, the upside to, like, indie and self-publishing is people can have all these varied and diverse voices, and people can have their little niche books, and people can do all this great stuff where the gatekeepers aren't saying, no, this won't sell. That's good, but it also has empowered anyone to throw up anything they like, unedited, just bad. There's bad stuff. There's just, you know, qualitatively bad stuff. And it's not that dissimilar to what we see happening with Cake World. And, like, people look at the cakes we make and go, I could do that. I'm not going to pay you $60 for a cake. I'm going to do it myself. And then when they're partway into it and they realize, oh, this took skill.
Yes.
Yeah, it's writing is the same thing. Publishing and writing are the same thing. That a lot of people, because they read books, they think, well, I could just write a book. And so, and while I encourage creative writing, and I encourage anyone at home to try making, I mean, that's the point of the name Eat the Evidence came from me naming a blog for everyone go play with edible media. If it doesn't work, eat the evidence. Nobody needs to know. You should have fun. But the difference is the people who say, well, I could make a 4-tier cake if I wanted to. And you're just looking at them like, really? Do you even have a dowel? Like, I could write a novel if I wanted to. And it's like, do you know how to spell the right there, or there? Because you haven't in this post. Do you know what I mean? Like, these are creative things where when you've done the work and the research, like you've just described you've done, then you can have more success. And then the people who don't do that, they wonder, well, how come I couldn't just do that?
Well, and here's the thing, too, is when you do either of those things, making cakes from home and, you know, writing, becoming a budding author, and you give those things to the people, you know, you give them to the people you would think, like your best friend and your husband and your friends and your neighbors, you give them to those people, and those people are not always going to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is how you end up on, like, American Idol, and you're like that person everyone's making fun of because everyone told you you have this great singing voice, and then you get there and it's like, oh God, it's so bad. Mm-hmm. Okay. I think writing and baking are the same thing. You've got to give it to people that are unbiased and let them read it. And that's why sites like Critique Circle are so valuable, because they have no skin in the game. These mm-hmm. people don't care. They will literally tell you what they think because they don't know you and they don't care about hurting your feelings. And, you know, they want honest critiques from you. And it is a tit for tat community. So you put your stuff out there, and that's what helps you become a better author. And same thing with baking. You know, it's a little bit harder because how do you get your stuff out there in the universe for other people to taste it and give you feedback? Oh, maybe contests. I did enter into a lot of contests back in the day when I was getting my stuff off the ground.
So, yeah, I mean, that's what we do. That's why The Austin Show has a beginner category.
Yes.
Come out and compete in the beginner category. Not all shows do. I mean, like, I keep saying I've done Austin. I went from The Austin Show. That was like my first cake show because I lived there. And then I moved here to England and went into Cake International, which is like, it's huge. It's the biggest one. It's insane. And Austin is super friendly, and, you know, judges who will write, you know, kind comments, and a beginner category where people, you know, the judges can say, well, we can see what you were going for here. Here are some ways to improve. Good job. Whereas Cake International, you're just diving in, like, and the judges can be harsh and cold sometimes. I mean, not mean, you know, they're just doing their jobs. I'm not slighting them, but it's these shows were two different flavors. So that's part of why The Austin Show is so valuable. And anyone who's anywhere within reasonable accessibility to The Austin Show, if you're a beginner, that's the show I keep saying. That's where to get your feet wet, because you will not come out sad.
Stina, it's so important that the criticism is constructive. I gotta tell you, when I got on Critique Circle, one of my very first critiques was so mean. I mean, this girl was just really mean, and I almost bailed. I was almost like, I can't do this. She had a lot of good insights, and once you sifted through all of the poor delivery, I guess you could say, of her feedback, you know, she did make some good, valid points. But that's the thing, is you've got to wear gloves sometimes so people can hear you. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I actually learned a lot from that critique, even if it was just how I wanted to critique others so that it could be productive for them and they could benefit from it, you know. And then also when you're receiving feedback, be objective, you know, listen to what these people are saying, because I got to tell you, if somebody gives me tough feedback on my book, I'm grateful because it's not going to pop up on a review and I'm going to be like a deer in headlights. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? It's like I will have seen it coming or I will have had the opportunity to fix it because somebody was honest with me and told me what needed to happen. And that's, I guess, the whole thing is you need to figure out who's going to be reading these books. And there is no product. There is no story. There is no cupcake. There is no anything that everyone is going to like. There are people who don't like water. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's what you have to remember. So, I mean, you're never going to write anything or produce anything that everyone's going to love. You just have to make it so that the people that you are goaling your work for are placated to the best of your ability, because that's your readership.
I mean, but I had like a similar thing with Finding Gaia with test readers that I noticed where it came down to age, because one of the characters, there's a running joke that she's one of the sub characters, but she doesn't know that because as far as she's concerned, she's the star of everything. Trish, her name is Trish. Trish drops F-bombs like crumbs from a plate. Like she just everything is swearing. She's angry. She's young. She's fed up with the world the way it is. She's very angry and young and passionate and very feminist. But the lead female character is 400 and something years old and very British and of her day. And she, her feminism is a whole different way of dealing with the world because of the things she's seen and the way she's had to survive. And it was really interesting with the test readers for that, how the younger women really loved Trish. She was just great. And Anna was boring. But the older women think, oh, Anna is such a wonderful heroine. And, oh, I loved her so much. And Trish swears too much. So, again, it's that who is my demographic for that? And I'm like, oh, I don't even know. I just kind of threw these two sides of how I see, you know, feminism can be, you know, first wave, second wave, third wave, how it can be represented in these different mindsets and how they can clash, but still also all be valid.
And isn't it funny how sometimes your beta readers surprise you because you think you have this one character that's very likable or that maybe they'd want to see a spinoff on, you know, and that character that you're thinking everyone's going to love, they don't. They want this other guy. You know, mm-hmm. it's like, what? It's sometimes you can't even, that's why it's so important to have beta readers, I guess is what I'm saying. It's so important to have other people who are not biased towards you read your work and give you honest feedback, because you really can't know how people are going to experience your novel. You're too close to it. And, you know, it's just so important that you do that so that you can grow as a writer.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, it applies again to other things too. When I was still in Austin with this blog, they had a recipe writing workshop, and it was the mantra was you should not be putting any recipe up unless someone else has tested it.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah, that's absolutely true.
I mean, even just for errors, because you know, there's all these famous horror stories of someone writing tablespoon when they meant teaspoon, or vice versa, or you know, what does your oven do versus what does someone else's oven do. I mean, you watch a show like Great British Bake Off. Sometimes the reason these tried and true recipes fail is because now they're using a really good, brand new commercial sponsor oven, not the oven they inherited from their mama.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's funny story that you even mentioned that. But when I went on Cupcake Wars the second time, that's how I ended up going home in round two. Because instead of chopping the vegetables that we were putting in this cupcake, my assistant put them in a Robocoup to blend them because it would be faster, and it released too much water and the cupcake was just goo. It just completely, little things like that do matter, you know? And if we would have tested it exactly the way we intended to prepare it on the show, then we wouldn't have had that issue.
It's time for a podcast helpful reminder. Are you working on a competition piece? Are you working on a client cake? When was the last time you checked the rules for your competition entry? When was the last time you read your client contract to make sure that you're spelling that name right? You're working really hard, I know, but every once in a while, you need to pause, go check that you're doing it right, because you're an amazing artist, but we all make mistakes. So right now, if you can pause, go check what you need to do, make sure it fits in the space that it needs to go into, make sure everything's spelled right, and then get back to work, because you're awesome.
Cupcake Wars was definitely an experience. I can tell you, I am done doing competitions. It is extremely stressful. It is extremely real. Everything that you see on the show is really happening. They don't stop the clock for any reason. And, you know, it's funny because I was on Cupcake Wars twice. And so I got to know some of the producers. And there is this one camera in one of the kitchens that has been set on fire 3 times.
Oh, my God.
You know, people will be sauteing. It's like over the stove and the fire goes up and the camera gets set on fire. And they do not stop filming. They're like, there's a camera on fire. We don't stop filming. The clock is totally real. And it's a cool experience because it's the kind of thing you can't buy into. You have to be invited. But yes, extremely stressful. I mean, just absolutely exhausting. You wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning and you have to be in full hair and makeup by 5 a.m. and on set. And you're filming all day long and the food is gross. Like, it's kind of cool because you actually have this Hollywood. It's on a Hollywood lot. I should just back up and say that. It is on an actual Hollywood film lot, okay? And you've got a dressing room with a star on the door and your name on the star. And in your dressing room, you've got a sofa and a little snack mini bar, and they bring you a menu for lunch. But the lunch is like this food truck caterer, and it's just like really dry chicken with like super soggy vegetables. And it's kind of funny because you think, I'm filming with Food Network, so this is going to be this like amazing food, but it's not. It's like back lot, like food truck food. So anyway, you're just, you know, you're doing this all day. You're on your feet. You're stressed. It's absolutely exhausting. The second time that I went on Cupcake Wars, that was actually my favorite time. And I ended up going home. So I didn't get to take home the glory on that episode, but I met Tom Hiddleston.
Oh, wow.
Because it was a Hollywood, it was a Hollywood studio lot, and they were filming Thor and the soundstage next to us. So I was unloading my delivery truck, you know, because you bring your own mixers. Like if you have a special mixer that you want to use or anything that you want to bring with you, they allow you to bring. So I was unloading my materials and they were filming Thor in the soundstage next door. And Jamie Alexander, who I did not recognize at the time, was standing there talking to me about the quotes on my delivery truck. She looked kind of familiar, but I didn't like connect the dots. And then I look over and Tom Hiddleston in his full on Loki outfit with like the freaking 4-inch platform shoes and the cape and everything walks by me. And I'm not kidding you. I was so uncool. I like collapsed against the back of my truck and like put my hand over my heart. And I was like, oh my God, it's you. And then he just looked at me and like laughed and like waved. I died. It was the best. Like I totally got sent home on Cupcake Wars, but that was the coolest thing ever. And if I had to go back and change it, I would change nothing. I would go back and I would do Cupcake Wars and go home in round two just because I got to meet all those famous people.
That is awesome.
Yeah, it was really neat, but it's just a really cool experience. But again, it is very draining. Like I said, I'm done. I was casted for a few other shows after that, or actually I shouldn't say I was casted. I was asked if I would like to audition for any other Food Network reality shows, and I politely declined because I think I'm done with that. But yeah, definitely very, very neat experience. And to this day, I mean, Cupcake Wars really did change our business. It slaps credibility right across the front of your cupcake shop. You know, you've been on that show and you've won. It definitely gave us a boost in business that to this day continues to bring people in the door.
Yeah, that echoes what I've heard. I mean, I've had a lot of friends on the various, particularly going back deep into the challenge days, and a lot of them, their businesses have been made because they were on that show. I got invited on that show and I submitted an audition and they said I was in the stable, but then that version of it got canceled. So, and it was gone for a while. And then they started having the various other branching out, the more battle-y type shows that they started doing. And then at some point I left the country and I was just like, oh, you know, kind of glad that I didn't actually go on, because there were some that other I got asked to do that I was like, no, ew. Like there was one, my friend Kyla, who, you know, runs the Austin show, and I, we were asked to do one where we were being asked to sign an NDA, in perpetuity. We could not speak ill of the, network or producers, or I won't say what network it was, but one of the major cable networks in the US. It wasn't Food Network. It was another one, trying to obviously cash in on the cake TV that was very popular at the time. And I was like, wait, so I can't criticize another show on your network without violating this? How about no? I don't want to be on TV enough to say that I can't have freedom of speech ever again.
Yeah, they definitely send you a very thick packet of legal documents that you have to sign, one of which says they will fine you $500,000 if you disclose the outcome of the show. They put the fear of God in you.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, you film the show and it doesn't come out for 3 or 4 months.
Right.
So you know exactly what happened and you cannot tell anyone. But yeah, I mean, it's, I certainly don't regret going on the show. It was a ton of fun and it was a once in a lifetime experience, but I'm good.
You've had your
once. I'm not doing any more of them.
One and done. So did you have to pay to bring all your own equipment? Because I know on Challenge, people were shelling out $3,000 and $4,000 to get there to try to win $10,000.
There is definitely some cost involved. You do bring in your own ingredients. Now, I can tell you that every other, I have some friends in the business, and not all the shows are like this, but for Cupcake Wars, you do bring your own ingredients. So you have to bring enough ingredients to assume that you've made it to round three. So, you know, you're bringing cupcake liners, flour, sugar, chocolate, you know, and you're not buying the cheap stuff because you're on a food competition. And not that we buy the cheap stuff, but I mean, like, we're bringing Calibo chocolate. I mean, our ingredients aren't cheap to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, there's definitely some expense involved. Food Network does reimburse you, but it was not as much as I needed, I guess you can say, to go on the show the way I wanted to. Like, for example, most people, what they do is they fly them in the day before. And then, you know, they'll go to the store and they'll buy all their ingredients and stuff. Well, I have a bakery in California. So I flew in from Minnesota 2 days early to go buy all my ingredients and source everything from my store. They wouldn't pay for my hotel for the 2 extra days.
Right.
You know, even though it made more sense for me to be able to do that than having a producer drive me around to go buy everything. So, I mean, in that way, yeah. And if you have a special mixer or something that you want to use, you do have to ship that. And there is expense involved in that, and they'll only reimburse you for so much. So there was expense involved, but it was definitely worth it, I would say, both times.
Right, because, yeah, I mean, that's, again, what I've heard is, particularly if you do go back to your bakery business, particularly if you're in the right market for it, that you can get it back.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
But I have had friends who went back to their bakery business in very small markets and kind of didn't get it back. Because, I mean, that's what Christy Seguin and I were talking about in the last episode is you can be the most talented cake artist in the world, but if you're in the middle of nowhere where no one has any money, then no one's going to come buy your luxury cake. So,
well, and that's very true. And we have different demographics for all of our stores. Our California store is in a smaller community, you know, than our Maple Grove store that's smack dab, like, right outside of Minneapolis, you know. And then there was a lot more competition in California. I feel like in California, there was cupcake shops in every corner. When I got to Minnesota, there really wasn't that strong competition. And I felt the state was very ready for the kind of business that we brought to the state. So, I mean, yeah, it all depends. They were ready for us in Minnesota for sure. And there was a very big lack of cupcake shops here. We didn't have cupcake shops to compete with. We really didn't.
Right.
In our Palmdale store, which is a lower volume store. I mean, the store itself is only 1,200 square feet. You know, it's a baby. We'll do a chef special in Maple Grove and Maple Grove, Minnesota. And everybody will be like, oh, when are we going to get this in Palmdale? When are we going to get this in Palmdale? So we'll make it in Palmdale. And nobody comes and gets it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, guys. Like, you know, so yeah, you know, admittedly, sometimes the Minnesota stores get things that the Palmdale store doesn't get, but that's just because when we give it to them, they don't come and they don't get it.
And it's frustrating when people, well, I mean, that's when I answered your poll, I was like, the way you phrased it, where 10 out of 10 would buy, or no, I don't want this. I thought, if you are seriously wanting people to tell you, yes, I will buy this, I don't want to be one of those people who's just for the lulls saying, yes, I will buy this, when I love your cakes, but I'm not buying them from here. I'm just not going to. That's not going to be a thing that's ever going to happen. So I'm not going to inflate your data, because that's really rude. Don't do that.
I wish they would have given me more poll options, because I would have put like 3 or 4 different, I mean, maybe not 3 or 4, but, you know, maybe love it, would buy one for something else, but not for mom, you know, or I'm not able to buy your cakes because you don't ship. Would have been so helpful, because then I could have determined whether or not there is a market for shipped Biggio'd cakes, which we are actually working on trying to ship them.
Yeah, I saw that.
Just know, if we do end up shipping them, we are probably going to have the customer put the locks on when they get their cake. So you will have to be a vajazzler, and we will leave you instructions on how to vajazzle, but it probably won't ship with the rocks in the crevice because it just won't hold up and it'll get weepy and melt.
Yeah.
As the cake thaws out.
That's right. You could include like a button in there, like a pin badge type button that says like, I'm a vajazzler or something.
Yeah. And I probably would.
I know who makes Rebecca Shear of Shear Celebrations in San Antonio does buttons for cakers.
Yeah, I might have to look that up.
Yep. So,
speaking of buttons, have you ever baked with Szechuan buzz buttons? Have you ever heard of those?
I have no idea what that is. No, what is that?
Okay. So it just, when you started talking about buttons, I started thinking, I bet I could get those on Etsy. Then I thought of the last buttons I got on Etsy, which are these Szechuan buzz buttons. They look like dandelions. They're probably the size of your thumb. And it's like this little yellow flower. It's an actual flower. And you eat it, and it's got this thing in it that makes your mouth tingle. It's like eating a Pop Rock and like Novocaine at the same time. It's just this wild ride.
Wow.
And they put them sometimes in drinks, and they're totally safe to eat. You can eat them pregnant. I mean, it's literally like you're eating a dandelion. You know, they used to use them back in the day for oral surgeries and things like that because it creates numbness and tingling in your mouth, and it helps with the pain. But you can bake them into things, and it gives your food zing. And it's particularly yummy with chocolate. You can put it in ice cream. I actually made ice cream. I have an ice cream maker at home, and I made some homemade chocolate ice cream using these flowers. And you eat it, and it makes your mouth buzz. Very interesting.
Wow, I've never heard of that. That's amazing.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you right now, they taste like dandelions. When it's in ice cream, you don't really notice the flavor. You just get that tiny little zing. But if you really want to experience the Szechuan buzz button in its full capacity, you have to eat it. And it is just, it's insane. Like, what is this? A flower did this?
Wow.
You're like drooling, and it's like your mouth is popping, and it's just crazy. They're a lot of fun.
That's anyway. Hilarious. That is very cool. And the name, given the context of other things, totally doesn't sound dirty at all.
No, it's not sexual at all, it's perverts.
I'm such a pervert. Oh my God, I'm thinking, you know what your geode cake need? It's a buzz button. Oh my God.
Oh my God. I would totally, I'm not kidding you, if these flowers did not taste like dandelions, I would totally stick them on cupcakes because everybody, I brought them as a party favor to my friend's 40th birthday party last year, and I was handing them around, and I mean, like 9 out of 10 people are like, oh God, this tastes horrible. What is happening in my mouth? I am just a very adventurous eater, and just, please don't make this a sexual thing, but I'll put things in my mouth that other people might not enjoy just for the experience. But it was pretty funny. I handed them around, and they were a fun novelty item. I will tell you that. But yeah, they taste like dandelions. So if that's not your bag, don't eat them without putting them in something else first.
Well, I mean, like, do people make salads with them? Because people make dandelion salad, right?
I'm not sure if they make salads. When I was looking up recipes, I want to say that there's, like, some Middle Eastern dishes that they put them in because it does give the food zing. And I tried it in Vegas. My sister was like, we are going to this bar. I think it was called the Diamond Bar. We are going to this bar, and we are getting the Szechuan button drink. And you're supposed to chew on the flower and then drink the drink. And it just changes like the whole experience, like this crazy acid trip for your mouth. But yeah, I would totally recommend trying it at least once. If you're having a party, it's like a really cool novelty party thing that you can do. You stick them in your cocktails and hand them around, and everyone tries it and they go crazy. And you know, and now you've done it once, so you're good for the rest of your life. But it's very cool, and you can bake with them. Okay. They ship you these live flowers, and they're fresh. You can also get them dried, but the fresh ones have more zing. They last for like a week in your fridge, and you can put, like I said, you can put them in cocktails, you can bake with them, or you can just eat them just for the mouthfeel of it.
I have friends who would probably put them in gin, because I live in England.
They are fabulous with gin because gin is so light and crisp, and this is like a flower, you know? Yeah, it would work in gin very quite well.
Well, there you go. Ruth, if you're listening, we'll get you some for Christmas.
Szechuan buzz buttons on Etsy. They ship from Florida. I highly recommend.
I'm now sitting here like, what else could I do with that? And because I do weird things with gelatin, I'm like, oh, I wonder if it's one of those things that will set up in gelatin or not. And then, because you could have a buzzy gummy.
Yeah, I have to tell you, I had to put a ton of these flowers into my ice cream to get any kind of zing out of it. I mean, like a lot.
Right. Well, because ice cream dampens down. I mean, that's part of the reason I have an ice cream maker too. And normally with recipes, I'm taking sugar down because I don't like sweet. I like dark. But when I did that a little too much with my first chocolate ice cream recipe, I was like, oh, right, because cold makes tastes dulled.
Yes. Yeah. I'm wondering if I were to bake it into a chocolate cupcake, how that would feel.
I think you need to do that.
The thing was, at the shop, whenever we, like, let's say I wanted to do this, right, at Nadia Cakes, if I wanted to do this, nothing at Nadia Cakes is small. If I were to offer this, I'd have to, like, make hundreds of these, right, which means I would need thousands of flowers, you know? So it's like I have all these cool ideas and I wish I could execute them, but it's like, if I'm being practical. And that's the thing that some smaller cupcake shops, you know, sometimes they can do these really cool novelty cupcakes because they only have to make a dozen, you know? But if we do them at Nadia Cakes, like, we better be ready. Like, we better be ready to mass produce this. And I'm talking about, like, 5,000 of this one thing between the two stores, because it will sell, you know?
How many are you selling a day, a week, or whatever your metric is?
It just depends on the shop and the location. I mean, on a Saturday, easily 5,000-6,000 cupcakes on a Saturday, one shop, just
wow.
One.
That's
yeah,
huge.
Yeah, I mean, it's, we've had lines that have wrapped around the block and are 2 hours long. It depends on, you know, what event we're doing. And we've gotten really good at these events where now we know how to staff and we know how to prepare for them so we can get these lines shorter. And kind of the key for us, like, for example, Unicorn Poop, we just used to do this event on April Fool's Day. We did it one day out of the year and the lines were 2 hours long the entire day. And so the next year we said, well, let's make it a two-day event so that, you know, we can spread these lines out a little bit. Same thing, two-hour lines. We did a three-day event the year after that. Same thing, two-hour lines. And what we realized is we're losing customers because there's people that simply are not going to wait in this two-hour line. Mm-hmm. You know, they just can't do it. So this year, we did a five-day event, and the lines were 20 minutes. So I think that's kind of our sweet spot.
Right.
But it's funny that, you know, we literally have to do this event 5 days in a row, and we are selling, I mean, just hundreds of thousands of cupcakes. I mean, it is this enormous event where people drive 5-6 hours. People come from South Dakota to come get these cupcakes because it's this once a year thing that we do, and they're super fun. But I mean, we prepare for this. We start planning in January for this event that takes place at the end of March. You know, we're talking about it in November, talking about Unicorn Poop. Speaking of people who are offended, I talked about this a little bit on my social media page, but I had this guy email me last year because our billboard was this cartoon unicorn wiping his rainbow ass on the, like, he was butt scooting across the billboard and there was like a rainbow streak.
Uh-huh.
And he was a cartoon and this guy was just triggered. This guy was like, bathroom humor has no place over the freeway. I am disgusted. I will never go to your bakery. I'm like, dude, if that offended you, you probably should really never go to my bakery.
Yeah.
Because it's not, the shirts alone are going to piss you off.
I'm thinking of the number of things that person should not look at. They should never look at the entire vast amounts of cakewrecks.com that are just poop jokes about poorly piped chocolate icing. They should never.
Oh God, it's like, don't even get on the internet, dude.
Yeah. The Squatty Potty commercial are, you know, I don't know if you know Amelia Carbine, but she's one of our friend cakers and Amelia Carbine made those, unicorn poop, ice creams for the Squatty Potty commercial.
Oh my God. Squatty Potty tagged us on Instagram last year for our unicorn poop cupcakes. And I went like fangirl.
Oh my God.
So that's really cool.
Yeah.
But you know, the rainbow poop lady.
The rainbow poop lady.
Yeah, I mean, you know what's funny is if that guy has any kind of social media, if he is on Facebook, probably just him sitting there and typing this, like, angry unicorn poop rant, he probably got a bunch of Squatty Potty commercials that, like, like raked their way down his timeline. Just because
that's right.
Facebook knows. Facebook knows everything. Thank you.
those of you who are actually working on a project right now, you're deep into it, you're working really hard, I want you to pause for a second. I want you to sit back, close your eyes, take a deep breath. No, no, come on, do this with me now. Sit back, close your eyes, deep breath. You've been working really hard. Stuff may not always be going well. Maybe stuff is going great. Whatever's happening, I want you now to slowly open your eyes and look at what you've made. Okay, maybe it's still got some problems. Maybe you're not done. But look at what you've made. You're so good at this. You are going to rock this cake. You are so amazing, and I have faith that you're going to get this done and everyone's going to love it. Okay, so you do your special event things like that. Do you also have like just a regular, you know, bog standard vanilla or chocolate or something that is that selling as regularly as well?
We have a dozen flavors that we carry every single day. We have a huge assortment of gluten-free, like a really impressive gluten-free cupcake assortment every single day, anywhere from like 6 to 12 flavors, depending on the day. We carry gluten-free, dairy-free every day in 3 to 4 flavors, and we even carry cupcakes for dogs. Ooh. We carry my Cupcake Wars winning cheesecake cupcake, and then every day I alternate or rotate 1 to 3 cupcakes on the menu. So every single day that you go in, there's a different flavor. We have almost 200 flavors on a rotating menu. So yeah, it's always fresh and new when you go in there, and you have to follow Nadia Cakes on social media. Every day I post what's available.
You had peanut butter on a banana cake when I was just scrolling through your posts, and there was a few interesting combinations there that's like, oh, I know who needs those ones. Oh, I know who needs those ones. So, because I have not actually been cupcake shopping myself. Kind of if I want a cupcake, I make cupcakes because I'm a caker, right? Also, I'm diabetic, so I don't actually eat a lot of cupcakes. So I'm curious, like, do people typically come in and buy a dozen, or are they coming in and buying one and sitting down and eating it, or how does that usually go?
The standard purchase is half a dozen. And we have a lot of extras too. Like we carry cannolis. My Minnesota locations have a full coffee menu, Sebastian Joe's ice cream, which is this really great locally made from scratch ice cream that we carry. It's a family run business. And we have a cold case full of all sorts of goodies that change up every day. We've got trifles and dessert bars and junkyard brownies and all kinds of cool stuff. So most people come in, and if they are going to stay and eat their cupcake there, they'll get one to eat there and then take like a 6-pack to go.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because, yeah, it kind of seems a little silly to buy one because you just then want more.
Yeah, we have 15 to 20 flavors daily. And my thing is, because I am, this will shock you, I'm a huge dessert person. My thing is I hate it when I go into a bakery and it's like 3 o'clock. And everything is picked over.
Yeah.
You know, you're getting like the last of this. That is like my biggest pet peeve. So my promise is that if you walk into my shop 5 minutes before closing, every single thing will be available. And I mean, like, you can buy a dozen of any flavoring that will be available. And the way that we do that is we have on-site kitchens. Nadia Cakes will never have a separate kitchen. A lot of bakeries will have one central site where they bake, and then they drive their cupcakes to the locations. And I got to tell you, that would have been a hell of a lot cheaper than putting 2 full commercial kitchens into bakeries that are just 30 miles apart.
Mm-hmm.
But I want people to come in. I want them to smell cake baking. And I want us to be able to be reactionary. So if we are selling through product, I want to be able to turn that product around and have it back in the case within 30 minutes. So we bake all day long. We bake right up until an hour before closing. So when you come in, everything will be there. And then our policy is we never sell anything after 24 hours. So every single tray gets labeled. you're never getting any cupcakes that have been sitting in that pastry case for longer than 24 hours. And we rotate everything out as we go.
So if you cook something at 5 o'clock, you know, before, I don't know what time you close, but right before closing, you can, it's still good for the morning. So you're not just tossing it that night.
No, we don't toss anything. We have very little waste at Nadia Cakes. And anybody that's gotten our cupcakes knows how fresh they are.
Right.
They've got a really fabulous shelf life. And the way that we store them, every single one of our cupcakes is completely enclosed by a custom-made glass case. So there's never any air touching your cupcakes. You know, it's not like we've got an open speed rack and we're serving from there. Everything is enclosed.
Okay.
So yeah, like, let's say that we're running low on chocolate vanilla. We'll bake another batch of chocolate vanilla at 6 o'clock at night. And the batch that's in the case will move down and we'll sell that first. And then the new ones will go into the display. And we constantly rotate them. So anything you get is less than 24 hours old, and there's always a full assortment to choose from.
I really want some right now.
We have a custom-made understock system that we developed, and underneath our pastry case is speed racks built into our cabinets that we slide our trays into so that we can constantly be pulling, and we're not pulling from the pastry case, because I just hate how that looks when it's like picked over.
Right.
I hate that. Well, I tell my team also, any cupcake that they sell needs to be ready to have its own photo shoot, because let's be honest, people, they photograph our cupcake. You know, I mean, we've got thousands upon thousands upon thousands of our cupcakes out there in the universe. And any cupcake that we sell, it's expensive, it's a gourmet product. So if it doesn't look 100%, we take it out of the rotation and we put it into a $5 four pack and we sell it at a deep discount.
Oh, that's cool.
So yeah, because I don't ever want anyone taking home an ugly cupcake and taking a picture of it. That's not cool.
No, I mean, especially because, I mean, part of the experience of the luxury baked good is the prettiness.
Yeah, of course. I was telling my husband, ever since I have this new, very intense social media following, I've been getting recognized out in public. And I've been kind of like, I've always been very private. I've never really been comfortable being the face of the business. It's just something I have to do. And recently, Erin Campbell, who is my Woodbury store manager, she's been doing a lot of the media and a lot of the news appearances because she won a holiday baking championship for Food Network. She won $50,000 and was also on Next Food Network Star and made it to the top five. So I'm like, Erin, you love people. You love being on camera. You do this. So one of the things that's going on recently is with this new social media following that I have, I'm getting recognized in public. And this actually sucks very much for me because, one, I am an introvert, and two, I like to eat desserts, and I like to go into other people's bakeries and eat their desserts, and I feel like a total creeper doing that. Like, I feel like I am creeping on their business, and they think I'm going to steal their recipes, and I'm not. I legitimately just want to eat somebody else's stuff sometimes. So that's my current lot in life.
Well, so we should just circulate that. So, like, if you're listening and you're in the same bakery area, if Abby comes and eats your food, it's because she wants to eat your food. There you go.
Yeah, I'm not going to take your stuff. I'm not going to steal any of your recipes. But, yeah, it really stinks today. And I can't remember how I got on that topic or what we were talking about. But I'm just feeling sorry for myself because now I can't be this anonymous person just in yoga pants walking into, like, somebody else's bakery and buying all of their snickerdoodles.
You can't just be in your Loki costume walking around the back lots because someone's going to see you and love you.
Exactly. It's funny because people take pictures with me. It's like the weirdest
it
thing.
It is.
Like,
oh my God. Yeah.
I'm like out and about and I'm like at, you know, the grocery, I'm at Cub or something, like looking at mangoes and somebody's like, oh my God, can I get a picture with you? And I'm like, yeah, totally. But it's just so, like, I just wish I was cooler, I guess. Like, I feel like apologizing to these people, like, hey, I'm sorry, it's like anticlimactic in person, but like, I am literally like coming from the gym. So
no, I had friends in Austin. I volunteered for a kids group called the Biscuit Brothers. So they had a PBS show and they constantly were weirded out by people being worshipful to them. And I said, no, here's my theory on what this is. And I call it the theory of celebrity goo. That when you're a celebrity, you acquire celebrity goo on you. And the bigger celebrity you are, the more goo you have and the more coveted your goo is. And people want to be in the picture with you or get the hug from you or shake your hand because they want some celebrity goo on them.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Like, I have all these questions. Like, I never actually end up seeing the photos that these people take with me. So, like, they don't tag me on social media. So I'm just wondering, like, where are all these photos going? Like, are they circulating out there in the universe? And I don't, like, I'll never actually see it, but it's out there, and it's kind of like weird and creepy. And the other day, somebody took a picture with me at Target, and I was like, I am so sorry I smell like ribs because I had barbecue for dinner. It's just, the goo is definitely on me. That's what I'm saying to you. The goo is on me. And if you ever meet me in public, don't be shy. I'm so appreciative that you think I'm cool enough to take pictures with. My 13-year-old will tell you I am definitely not that cool. And I will take a photo with you, but I will tell you in advance, I'm an introvert. I'm probably going to be awkward. And I may or may not smell like barbecue if that's what I have for lunch. So
So what you're saying is you walk around smelling delicious and awesome.
I've actually tailored my behavior recently to the potential photo shoot, like the potential PetSmart photo shoot that I might end up taking with some random stranger. Like, I better take a shower before I go out because I don't know if I'm going to be recognized. And it's like, I can do this one or two ways. Like, I can go out in like full on hair and makeup, which I hate, but I can go out in full on hair and makeup, anticipating that I will be recognized somewhere and I will have to take a picture with someone. But if I do that and I've got my hair and makeup on, I'm so much more recognizable because those are the only photos I ever post to myself online is when I'm actually made up. So then the other side of it is I will go out just looking tore up. Okay. Like, I'm talking like the yoga pants, flip flops, like maybe I'm wearing a bra, maybe not. Probably not if I'm wearing a sweatshirt. And I'll go out like that, just hoping that I'm so dressed down that nobody recognizes me. But then it sucks extra hard when they recognize me anyway. And then now I'm in a picture with somebody dressed like that. So these are my choices now. These are my choices these days.
Well, so when people probably are sharing those pictures, but I mean, depending on where they're sharing them, if you're not following, like they could be private, like you're just not seeing, even if they tag you, if it's a private group that if they post it to their mom group and you're not in the group, you're not going to see that.
Yeah, well,
So
I guess.
yeah. There could be a lot of sharing going on, and they may even think that you can see it, but just depending on privacy settings, because on Facebook, your page is a page. It's not a
Right.
person. It's a page. So it's going to be more restricted what it lets you see people post, even if they tag you, if their privacy settings don't let that page see it.
Yeah, so I guess the message that I have for everyone out there who's seeing these photos that I am not seeing, I'm sorry that I did not do my makeup that day, and take it with a grain of salt. But yeah, it's definitely weird. It is definitely weird. And especially in Minnesota, in California, there's so many celebrities. Like, everybody's been on a reality show. I mean, if you go anywhere in California, chances are you're going to spot somebody that, has been on TV. But in Minnesota, I feel like there's a lot less of that, So I do not feel like I'm a big deal, but I think sometimes people meet me and they think that I am because there's just no one else.
Well, I mean, to some extent, you sound like a lot of the people I know who are creative people who are like, why are you worshiping? I mean, I'm gonna drop that name again, Mike McCary, the cake god. Because he does not like it when we call him that, which is now why we call him that, because it's funny. When he first was coming to the Austin show and I knew he was coming, like, again, that's when I was doing the show cake. I felt like everything had to be perfect because his holy eyes shall not fall upon that which is not worthy. Like, I mean, and now I know him as like a
Oh my God,
friend,
that's hilarious.
and he's like, now just could you not? And I'm like, but do you know that you're Mike McCary, the cake god? So he tries to do it back to me now. If he's doing a demo and he sees me, he'll mention my stuff because he knows it makes me turn sh 10 shades of red. But I'm like, yeah, here's the difference, Mike. Everyone here is watching you because they've heard of you. None of them have heard of me. So it doesn't work back to do it. But he's always like, why? Why? And I'm like, because of the amazing stuff you make. So I had someone come up to me once and ask me, were my old show cakes in a museum somewhere they could see? And I'm like,
What?
no, that's not a thing. They're at my house. She was like jumping up and down and clapping that she got to meet me. And I'm like, I have no idea why you even know who I am. Like,
that's so funny.
It was, and that was years and years ago. So, like, that was long before podcasts or even, like, the blog didn't even have any. People, someone says to me, I read your blog. I'm like, oh, you're the one. it's weirding me out. And I haven't, if I'd been on TV and had celebrity goo, I can sort of see, I've been just enough on the edge of that to see how creepy and weird that would be.
Yeah, there's a little bit of goo on me for sure.
Yeah.
Especially recently.
Yeah. Well, you have the geode goo.
Oh my God, it is the geode goo.
That is so inappropriate.
Lady of Pink.
It's going to melt the sugar. That's my caker brain is like, the goo is going to melt the sugar. But yes, I've kind of run out of questions because I'm thinking of the geode goo. Oh, wow.
Well, we've covered so much.
We have.
Just think, I started super small with my social media, and then there was the Vigeode.
You never
so
know.
You just need to have your Vigeode.
I did. Well, God, 10 really inappropriate things just went right through my head. Just, the thing you have to know about me is I on social media, drop F-bombs like crazy and very outspoken and very rude at times because I've just hit that point in my life where I don't care. So this is like the nice version of me. So I'm like, oh, all the things I will not say right now.
Yeah, it's funny because for Naughty and Cakes, I have to be so PG. And yeah. I am very filtered and censored on that platform. But on my own personal page, I'm just letting people know I am going to cuss.
Well,
I might not be safe for work.
Your banner picture. I love your banner picture. They have the tweet about...
Yeah, the prostitute.
Yeah. Do you want to say what it
yeah,
says?
Yeah, I'm just gonna be me. And here's the thing. My romance novels are the same way. There's F-bombs all over that. So I guess it's better I'm just preparing people for what my novels are going to be like.
On my... on the Finding Gaia page, like, when you go to the landing page, it sends you to various parts because, like, you can immerse yourself in their world or you can just read about the book. But you go to the page about the book, like how to buy the book, I have a thing that says, warning, this book contains violence, sex, and swearing. And then right beside it, I say, advertisement, this book contains violence, sex, and swearing. Because some of us like that stuff and some of us don't. And both are valid choices.
Yeah. Since we're on this platform, I'm going to plug my friend Summer's book, An Awkward Path to Getting Lucky.
An Awkward Path to Getting Lucky?
It is based, The Awkward Path to Getting Lucky, it is based in a cupcake shop. And the main character has a vaginal issue, that is the conflict within the story. And she has a funny X-rated scene that happens sort of like the Vigeode happened. Yeah, so definitely read that book. If you like witty, wry humor with lots of F-bombs, you will love that book.
Okay, and I'll put a link to it in the show notes.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, she'll appreciate that.
So what's her full name? It's
Summer Heacock.
Summer Heacock. Okay, I will look
and
that
the
up.
The book is The Awkward Path to Getting Lucky. I normally wouldn't recommend a book, but this is literally based in a cupcake shop. And it was very authentic, I can tell you. Someone who has a cupcake shop, she did a good job portraying that universe.
Is it about you?
No, actually, that's how we met, though, because the geode thing went viral, and her friends and editors and everyone was telling her, oh, my God, you have to do a book signing at this lady's shop.
Oh, that would be awesome.
And that is literally how I met her, and she's a very good friend of mine now.
Oh, that's great. I love cake friends coming together. Over
it's the best.
Over perverted cake.
Yes.
I mean, I'm very happy to have met you. When I saw someone sharing one of the tweet about the party you want to have for the romance books, I saw that come up in the One Bad Mother, One Bad Bodice Ripper subgroup. And I was like, I'm interviewing her in 2 weeks. Yay!
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
I was like pretending like, yeah, oh yeah, we're totally friends and hang out. Like, no, I've never met her. I don't even know if she knows my name, but I'm going to pretend that now. Yep.
My literary agent was asking me, you know, what are some creative ways we can promote the book and tie it in with your bakery? And I thought, how fun is that to have the keys to a really awesome, like, world-famous cupcake shop and just be able to bring everybody in there in their pajamas and hang out?
Oh, you had so many people who weren't even, like, in this private group. There were at least two dozen people saying, So, I mean, like, even, like, there was the responses on your actual post. And then there are thousands of responses you're not even seeing of people saying, please make this a thing.
Oh, wow. See, that's why I need a publisher to publish these novels.
That's right. You do.
Because the people want this book signing event. I hope we can find the correct publisher for this thing, because I think I definitely have an audience and they are waiting.
Yeah, well, I will buy it. And as someone who really hates it when people say, I'm going to buy your book, and then they don't, I mean it. I'm going to buy it and read it in the copious free time I have. It may have to wait for the next time I'm stuck on an airplane.
Oh, I so can't wait to. You know, writing a book is like watching a TV show that you can't talk to anyone about. You know, you spend like 6 to 9 months writing this thing and living in this universe, and nobody knows about it but you.
Yep. I call them the fake people who live in my head.
Yeah. I mean, it was cool having people on Critique Circle read it, and I've got those beta readers, but, you know, they read it in there's a thing called the Critique Circle effect, because you read the story one chapter at a time, and it takes 4 to 5 months. Mm-hmm. So I just really am looking forward to when I have readers that just get to sit down and read it, and then I can discuss it with them and tell them all the things and how I came up with this or that. And
yeah, well, that's the big fantasy. I mean, I used to write as if I was speaking to a con full of fans, and I lived in terror of the person who would say, well, on page 47, you said X, but on page 53, you said Y, and those things don't match up. And I'd be like, I have to defeat pedant con fan. And now it's like, I'm not being invited to any cons. I don't know why I was so hard on myself, but that probably means I actually did a better product in the end. But yeah, I want that. That would be awesome.
Cared and you were meticulous.
Yeah. But then there's that, see, now we've got this conflict where, yeah, wouldn't that be cool to talk to the people? But then when they come up to you in the grocery store, now it's weird.
Well, see, I feel like it's different if you're at a con or you're at an event and you know people are going to come up to you, you're in the right headspace.
That's right, yeah.
You know, but like when you're just checking out asparagus at Cub Foods and someone comes up to you and wants to take a picture with you, you're like, I'm not ready for this.
Yeah, yeah. It's the dual-edged sword of fame. You can drown in your own celebrity goo. See, this metaphor, it just keeps paying in all the worst, terrible ways.
I know.
It's really quite gross. Anyway, I should probably let you go at this point, but thank you so much for coming on. Super famous to be writer.
Super fun.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm just so excited that to talk about the famous cakes, but also, you know, the stuff you've got coming up, because it sounds very exciting, and I really definitely wish the best for you, and I can't wait to read it.
Well, I cannot wait to listen to this podcast.
Yay!
Well, I really appreciate you having me on.
Okay,
this was a lot of fun.
It's been awesome, and I'll make sure the show notes have all your social media links and all that good stuff, and so everyone can follow you and bask in your amazing, hilarious wisdom.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
All right.
Have a good night.
All right, you too. Bye.
Bye. And just one quick final note, Nadia Cakes was able to work out a shipping plan for the Vigeode Cakes. So go to their website at nadiacakes.com, that's Nadia, N-A-D-I-A, cakes.com, or check out the show notes for more links and information. This has been the Eat the Evidence podcast. A warm thanks to all of my contributors, and you can find out more about them and the things discussed on today's episode in the show notes by visiting the podcast section of the Eat the Evidence website, eat-the-evidence.com/podcast. There, you'll find social media links, as well as links to iTunes, Stitcher, and other places where you can subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. I've also posted detailed instructions on how to leave me a Facebook voicemail message and other options to call into the show. Please do feel free at any time to call in your very own cake formation, funny story, talk about a challenge you're having or have recently overcome, or rant about something driving you crazy. And if you like the show, please post a review on iTunes and share it with all of your sugar artist friends. This show was produced and edited by me, Kimberly Chapman. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, you are an amazing artist, and everyone involved with this podcast supports you. You can do it! Until next time, bye-bye, and good luck with whatever you're working on. Thank you.
you doing? I'm like, I'm playing with my new friends.